Welcome to another deep dive. This time we're taking a closer look at the Book of Kings. You know, there's way more to this book than meets the eye.
Oh, absolutely. It's packed with history and drama and honestly, some pretty juicy royal gossip too.
Now, I gotta admit, I always thought of Kings as, you know, pretty straightforward, bunch of stories about kings, good and bad.
Well, that's part of it for sure. But what's really fascinating is that the way we encounter Kings today as two separate books isn't how it originally was.
Wait, really? So it was just one big book at first?
Yep. You wouldn't believe how much decisions from, like, centuries ago still impact how we read the Bible today.
So how did we end up with 1st and 2nd Kings then?
So the Septuagint, you know, that ancient Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, well, they were the first to split it up. And then later, Jerome's Latin Vulgate, super influential back in the day, followed suit.
Huh. So it's like we're holding a piece of history every time we open the Bible.
You got it. But back to Kings, the story it tells is epic. It's like a three-act play, almost.
Ooh, I love that analogy. Tell me more.
Okay, so Act 1, that's all about Solomon, you know, the Golden Age, united Israel. Then, in Act 2, things get messy. The kingdom splits, and we follow both Israel and Judah.
Sounds like trouble brewing.
Oh, it is. And finally, in Act 3, we witness the fall of Judah. Curtain closes, end of an era.
Wow, that's a roller coaster of a story. I'm sensing a theme here, more than just listing who did what when.
Exactly. And that brings us to one of the most unique things about Kings, how it judges each king. There's a formula, like a royal report card.
Report card? Now that's interesting. What kind of stuff is on it?
Well, it covers the basics, right? Their age, when they took over, how long they ruled, where they ruled from, even their mom's name.
Gotta keep track of the family tree, huh?
But here's the kicker. The author, or authors, give their verdict on each king's reign. Good, bad. And why?
So it's not just neutral reporting. There's a definite moral compass guiding this whole thing.
Absolutely. It's like the author saying, all right, here's the rundown on King so-and-so, and here's what we think of how he did. Let's look at Rehoboam, the first after Solomon. 1 Kings 14.21, that's where you'll find his basic stats, even his mom's name. Then skip ahead to 1 Kings 14.2931, and boom, there's the final verdict summing up his whole reign.
Huh. That's fascinating. Like, they're reviewing his performance based on, well, I'm guessing they're faithfulness to God and all that.
You got it. Obedience equals blessings. Disobedience, not so much. Now, were the northern kings judged differently from the southern ones?
That's a great question. I mean, they were two separate kingdoms after all.
And the answer is yes. The northern kings ruling over Israel, they get pretty consistently bad reviews, you know, criticized for following those idolatrous practices set up by Jeroboam, the first king up north.
Right, those golden calves, yeah, not a good look.
Not according to the author, only a handful escaped that criticism.
So not a great track record for the north. What about the kings of Judah down south? Any better?
They get a slightly more nuanced treatment. But the recurring theme is that most didn't totally get rid of those local shrines, the high places, seen as competition for the temple in Jerusalem, you see.
So centralizing worship was a big deal for the author, or authors, whoever they were.
Definitely a key theme. Only Hezekiah and Josiah, they get a perfect score for their religious reforms.
So it seems like whoever wrote Kings had a very clear agenda. Not just recording history, but interpreting it through a specific lens.
100%. Which leads us to the big question. Who were these authors? Who was shaping this narrative?
Right, because it wasn't actually Jeremiah, was it? I always thought he was the author for these historical books.
Yeah, that's the traditional view, but most scholars today disagree.
Really? Why is that?
Well, it's like a historical detective story, you know? The last thing mentioned in Kings is the release of King Jehoiachin from prison in Babylon.
Okay, and that was around 562 BC, if I remember correctly.
You got it. Now, if we use Jeremiah's own book to trace back and figure out how old he would have been then, well, it's possible he was still alive, but not super likely.
So if not Jeremiah, who? Was it like a group effort?
That's one of the main theories. The Deuteronomistic history theory is pretty popular these days.
Deuteronomistic history. Break that down for me.
Basically, the idea is that a group of scribes, maybe prophets, super influenced by Deuteronomy, they compiled and shaped the narrative of Kings. They might have even used older sources, like those court records mentioned in the text itself.
Wait, like a book within a book? Those annals of the kings they keep referencing?
Bingo. Those annals were probably some kind of official record keeping, though what exactly they were is still a mystery. But they weren't the only source, for sure. I mean, those detailed stories about Elijah and Elisha, they wouldn't come from dry court records, right?
Yeah, those are some of the most vivid parts of the book. So it seems like the author or authors were weaving together different threads.
Exactly. Creating this rich tapestry of history, prophecy, and theological reflection.
This is getting more and more fascinating. So we've got this potential group of Deuteronomistic scribes shaping the book. But when was it all finalized? Any clues about the timeline?
Well, the release of Jehoiachin around 562 BC, that's our anchor point. It had to be written after that. And there's no mention of the end of the Babylonian exile, which was in 539 BC.
So that narrows it down quite a bit. It had to be finished before that.
Exactly. But now we've got another puzzle to solve. What about those to this day phrases sprinkled throughout Kings? Don't they suggest an earlier author, someone writing pre-exile?
You're right. I mean, 1 Kings 8.8 talks about the poles for carrying the Ark of the Covenant and says they are still there today. But wait, if the temple was destroyed, those poles would be gone, right?
Exactly. And there are more examples, like 1 Kings 9.2021 talking about Solomon's forced labor and saying it continued to this day.
So how do we make sense of that?
It's a real head-scratcher. Some scholars say those phrases point to a pre-exilic author, but others argue they could be quotes from older sources, which allows for a single author writing during the exile. It's like a literary jigsaw puzzle.
Wow, this is more complex than I ever imagined. It's like the book itself is a witness to this debate about its origins.
Mm.
But before we get lost in authorship mysteries, I want to hear more about this Deuteronomistic influence. What does it actually mean for how we understand the stories in Kings?
That's a great question, and it's where things get really interesting. The Deuteronomist perspective adds a whole new layer of interpretation to the events.
Okay, so they're looking at history through a particular set of glasses. But what exactly are these Deuteronomistic glasses? What do they help us see?
Well, think of it this way. The Deuteronomistic perspective is all about obedience to God's covenant. When the kings and the people were faithful, good things happened, you know? But when they turned away, disobeyed.
Things went south, to put it mildly.
Exactly. They believed that pattern was woven into the very fabric of their history.
And they were making sure everyone saw it.
Right. Kings becomes almost like a case study. Each king's reign judged on their faithfulness. Now, you mentioned some debate about this Deuteronomistic theory, right?
Yeah, there are always different perspectives, especially in scholarship.
Absolutely. And a big one centers on the book of Deuteronomy itself. Some scholars think it was written much later than the events it describes, possibly even during King Josiah's reforms.
Oh, so they're saying the Deuteronomists might have been looking back through the lens of their own time, kind of projecting their own ideas onto the past.
That's the argument. And it raises a big question. If Deuteronomy was written later, how could it be used to judge kings who lived centuries earlier? It's like grading a student on a test that didn't even exist when they were in school.
Yeah, that doesn't seem very fair, does it? Judging someone by rules they didn't even know.
It's a sticky point, for sure. And it leads some scholars to question whether the Deuteronomistic interpretation of events is always accurate. Could there be some bias there?
So, not as clear-cut as it might seem at first glance. Any specific examples where this potential bias might be evident?
One of the big ones is Jeroboam I, the first king of the north. Kings paints him in a pretty negative light, mainly because he set up those rival worship centers at Bethel and Dan.
Oh yeah, those golden calves.
Yeah.
Definitely not kosher in traditional Israelite religion.
Exactly. But some scholars, like Julius Wellhausen, he was a big-time biblical critic, argued that during Jeroboam's time, there wasn't really this idea of centralized worship in Jerusalem.
So they're saying there wasn't this one true place to worship yet.
That's the idea. That concept came later. So from their perspective, Jeroboam wasn't actually breaking any rules because the rules, as the Deuteronomists understood them, didn't even exist.
Wow, that's a different take. So you have the Deuteronomistic view that condemns him, and then others saying he was just doing what was normal for his time.
Two very different perspectives, and it really gets at the heart of how we interpret history, you know, especially when religious beliefs are involved.
It really makes you think, are there other parts of Kings where we might need to pause and consider different interpretations, add some nuance to the Deuteronomistic view?
Absolutely. History is never as simple as it seems on the surface. And it's an invitation to engage with these texts critically, you know, question our assumptions, be open to other viewpoints.
Which is what makes this so fascinating. So far, we've uncovered this interplay of history and theology in Kings, this story of kings and prophets, faithfulness and rebellion, blessings and curses.
Right. And we've seen how the way that story is told is shaped by the Deuteronomists, their particular perspective.
It's just one layer, though, right? And we still have those to this day phrases to unpack. They offer some clues about how this whole book came together.
Yeah.
Yeah, those "to this day" phrases, they still kind of bug me. How can we make them fit with this single author idea writing during the exile?
You got to remember, ancient authors, they thought about using sources way differently than we do. No strict rules about plagiarism or quotes.
So they can just list stuff from older texts, word for word, no problem.
Pretty much. Imagine our author, surrounded by scrolls, building this grand narrative. He might have taken whole sections from those Annals of the Kings, other sources. No need to change everything.
So those "to this day" phrases, they can be like echoes of those older sources.
Exactly. Little time capsules, showing us the different historical layers that make up the book.
That actually makes a lot of sense. Instead of being a problem, they're evidence of how the book came together.
And that process, it says a lot about how rich and deep the whole biblical tradition is. Always being reinterpreted, reapplied a conversation across centuries.
And we're part of it now, right?
Yeah.
Still asking these questions about history, faith, interpretation. It's amazing how these ancient texts can still get us thinking.
It really is. Kings is way more than just old stories. It's a living text, still challenging and inspiring us.
We've covered so much ground in this deep dive. The structure of Kings, the mysteries of its authorship, how it views history through that theological lens.
Right. We've debated the Deuteronomistic theory, those "to this day" phrases, how the author wove together all those sources.
I feel like I have a whole new understanding of Kings now.
And we've only scratched the surface. There's always more to discover.
I know, right? It's exciting. But before we wrap up, is there one last thought, a question, something to leave our listeners with?
It comes down to this. Knowing that Kings might have been shaped by a certain viewpoint, how does that change how you read it? What does it say about history itself, how we remember the past?
Wow, those are some big questions to ponder as we continue to explore Kings. And with that, we wrap up our deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions. Happy reading.